Welcome to El Telejon's La Liga Weekly. After a good weekend for the big three, Real Madrid needed that after their humiliation in the Copa against an Alcoyano side containing some of the oldest footballers you've ever seen. Get well soon to Zidane, who missed the victory at Alaves because of COVID. So credit goes to David Bertoni, who stood in for his mate. Although, to be fair, I think I could fill in for Zidane and I wouldn't need a handover note. Casemiro, Modric, Kroos in midfield. Yeah, Benzema up top. Oh, Hazard's fit. Oh, there's a bonus. Yeah, we'll have him in. And then when you've got 10 names written down, you see what's left, and that's where Lucas Vazquez goes. Barca avoided a cup upset when they walked over to the sports centre at Cornea and took on the Thursday night footy lads, who had all turned up in green, which was handy because of usually someone who doesn't read the WhatsApp. Barca followed that up with a win over Elche, courtesy of a towering header from big Ricky Puig. The shortest range goal ever in the history of football was scored by Frankie de Jong. Contrast that to Valencia's Juroš Račić beating Jan Oblak. But that was in vain because, of course, Valencia weren't going to beat Atleti. Elsewhere, Sevilla's Youssef En-Nesyri banged in another hat-trick, and none of his goals looked like he'd scored them by accident. Joaquin was the hero for Betis as they got a dramatic draw at Real Sociedad. He overtook Ferenc Puskas to become the third oldest goal scorer in La Liga history. But the great Hungarian retains his title as the fattest man to ever score 700 senior goals. Tropical satire with La Liga Weekly as ever. Daniel and Raphael are our latest Patreons. Welcome along. Thank you to all the Patreons. And no gas from Wales. They're not paying a fiver just to see our faces. They also get exclusive content. We'll have you know. But you do get to see our faces as well. Right. Good weekend, Terry. Obviously, we did a Patreon special after the midweek round and those cup games, so we're not going through that in detail again. So we'll crack on. Good weekend of action from La Liga. And I guess, Terry, we should start at the top, shouldn't we, with Atletico in the last game that we've had so far. Still got a game to come Monday night. And they, despite going behind to a fabulous goal, they know how to grind out results, Atleti.
Yeah, and you know what? You said in the intro about Valencia were never going to beat Atletico. It was highly unlikely, but they did have a go, didn't they?
Yeah.
You know, they took the game to Atletico from the opening minutes of the match. They put Atletico under pressure. Atletico were under pressure in terms of how they had to defend certain situations. So, you know, for them to Rakic to get that goal, to put them in the lead, it wasn't against the runner play. And, you know, at that stage, it was game on for Atletico and they had to play at their best. They were much improved from the win against Eibar in midweek. And they had to be because Valencia, to their credit, did put up a good fight. So it was a classic Atletico performance in terms of once they get on top, they put their foot down and they don't let you breathe. They don't let you get back into the game. And they have, you know, the quality to finish teams off. Luis Suarez, João Félix, Correa coming off the bench. Does the quality speaks for itself? Energetic performance from both teams. And Atletico has 7 straight wins now. The consistency is admirable. And the consistency is the reason why they're probably going to win the league this season.
And Luis Suarez, and a lot of people say this, it will go down in history as one of the worst bits of business ever, if Barcelona have basically given the guy away. There was a case for getting him off the wage bill. There was a case for not having him and Messi in the same team because their downsides are similar in terms of the pressing. But to give him away, obviously, to Atleti was extraordinary in that he's looking very much like the missing piece of their jigsaw.
He is. And do you know what? He takes very little part in the game. Mm. And then when he does, he's so decisive. And Simeone, to his credit, is bearing up with that. You know, I know Suarez is, the output is there in terms of the goals, his creativity, just by being there sometimes draws defenders to him and allows, you know, his teammates to make the most of the space available. So it can still be a tough watch, you know, against Eibar, barely participated in the game, scored a goal and got the penalty. So that's when, you know, his experience and Simeone is not putting up, that's the wrong word, but he's bearing up with the fact that Suarez can't chase around the pitch, but then you've got Marcos Llorente that can do that, you've got João Félix can do that, Correa can do that, there's other players in midfield, Thomas Lemar looks a completely different player now, and, you know, it's they've got enough players to fulfil those roles, and then Suarez is the player that's with the experience up front, and you know, mustn't forget, first and foremost, his quality when it comes to finishing chances. He comes alive. You know, it's that's when we do see the little flickers of what Suarez has always been about. There's been more to his game in the past, of course. But now, you know, when he has to be decisive, when a chance comes his way, you're relying on a player that knows his trade better than most. So he is, you know, clearly making a big difference to Atletico in this season's La Liga.
It'd be great for his legend if they go on and win the league in this circumstances for him. Now, Terry, you've done a bit of research, haven't you? A bit of extra research. Obviously, your exhaustive watching and analysis of La Liga is legendary, but that Rakitić goal was something special. But you've been having a sort of a closer look at where goals are scored from.
Yeah, I've been looking at this. I mean, the certain clubs in particular, certain teams in particular, they do struggle to score goals. And we come on the podcast every week and we refer to they don't score enough, they don't score enough. So I thought this weekend I'll put a little bit more thought into it. And lo and behold, one of the teams I'm talking about with Real Betis, I've bemoaned the fact that, you know, playing up front for Betis is a tough gig. They don't get the ball in the box enough. They don't get enough players into the penalty area. And just recently, I have seen a change. So this week I was looking at the games and why Betis suddenly are scoring goals against Canales in particular, of course. And it's so simple. I mean, we talk about how, so many different aspects of professional football now. It basically boils down to this week. I mean, I'll go back to Betis in a moment. There were 28 goals scored in La Liga this weekend with one game to go. Inside the box, 25 of them were scored. So therefore, get the ball in the box, got a far better chance of scoring a goal. Three were outside the penalty area. Rakitić was one of those. Alcaraz was another for Valladolid. And Moncayola, I'll give him outside the box. It was right on the edge, but just outside. So that just goes to show how, you know, the regularity of getting the ball into the penalty area. Of those touch, in terms of how many touches it takes to finish a goal as well. That was interesting. 20 were one-touch finishes out of the 28 goals. So I wish someone had told me this when I was playing. It was mentioned briefly as I was a striker. Oh, you know, get yourself in the penalty area. But, you know, it was a kind of afterthought. And, you know, particularly when you're having times where you're struggling to score goals, you're lacking confidence, you then start to try and do everything else as well to contribute to the team. And basically it boils down to someone should have just said to me, goal in, get in the box, get on the end of a knockdown, get on the end of a cross, as opposed to doing all the other stuff that you try to do to make up for the fact you're not doing your job. But so there was one touch finishes 20.
Yeah, there's a downside that though, isn't there? In the, because if you, as you say, Simeone is tolerating Suarez being just a poacher. Because if you're a team down the bottom end of the league, so if you're Valladolid or someone, you can't afford just a guy just hanging around waiting for a one-touch finish. Can you? You need a guy doing everything, don't you? In that
there's nothing more important, though, than the goals.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the teams that get relegated will score fewer goals.
Yeah.
And it's having the courage to at least have one of those players that is ultimately a finisher. Yeah. That finishes off, you know, whatever system you play, it can be 4-3-3, 3-5-2, 4-4-2. You do need someone to, because if you don't score goals, Huesca, classic example, they're going to struggle this year because they can't find a way to for someone to score on a regular basis to win them games, you know, by the odd goal, as opposed to drawing a million games, which they've done this season. So, let's say 20 of those are in one-touch finishes, 18 inside the box, two outside. So, Rakitić and Moncayola's were the one-touch finishes where, you know, the ball's come to them. Rakitić's case, it's a worldie, it's an unbelievable goal. Moncayola's was a quick reaction on the edge of the box. Alcaraz scored a goal from outside the penalty area after running with the ball, so that was a multiple touch finish. So, but the point I'm sort of alluding to is that goals are scored in the penalty area, so the ball has to get in there. You have to have the players in there. You have to have the right players in there. And mostly the technique is of a one-touch finish. I'll do it again in a few weeks' time, just to so this is not, you know, an unusual weekend. I think it's a pretty usual weekend.
Yeah.
In which amount of goals that we see scored. There was two five players had two touch finishes in the box.
Yeah.
So that's control and finish. That's sharpness needed. So that was Roger Martin would probably be the best one. Touch and turn, he controlled it on the turn and finished these. Bryce Mendes, Luis Suarez, Atletico, he had a touch, set himself up, looked up to, as if he was going to cross it, then goes for goal himself. Luis Suarez of Granada reacted quickly to a deflection from a defender, touch, control and finish, and Hazard. His was a two-touch finish in the penalty box again. Three-touch finishes, which you don't normally get the opportunity to have three touches and score a goal. Unless you're in Nesri last week when he miscontrolled the first one, bounced off his second and finished. And Benzema was the only player to do that. He did it for both his goals. So I think that there's an element there of perhaps that's how poor the defending was from Alaves, that they allowed the one player this weekend to have three touches and score in the penalty area. So it's not just about scoring goals. This is about how you stop goals as well.
Yeah.
And Atletico this season are the masters. Keep the ball out of the box. It's the importance of blocking those crosses. You know, the importance of tracking runners, the importance of, you know, you have to track runners because if a ball goes wide and it gets crossed into the box, someone is more likely going to score with a one-touch finish. So anticipate the cross, block the shot from the player that's, you know, it's got the opportunity. So it was just that's something I thought I'd do. I think 28 goals is a decent number to do it on as well with a game to go. And it, I was quite surprised that out of that 28, effectively 25 of those are in the penalty area. So when what I'm saying is trebles, what's the saying in darts? So we talk about all these systems of play and playing between the lines.
Yeah.
And this press and that block and this lot. Basically, it boils down to the penalty areas at each end. How good you are defending them, how effective you are in, efficient you are in dealing with penalty box play. Some games you see, you look at teams and they barely had a touch in the penalty box. There's no excuse, none whatsoever, for not getting the ball into the penalty box.
I see what you mean. In that, Betis at their worst,
as well.
And actually Villarreal at their worst as well would be another one. I think. I mean, you can the teams have these stats, don't they? I think they can look up these details. It's a question of knowing what stats you want to look at, isn't it? Because there's too much out there to get your head around. I believe it's trebles for show, doubles for dough.
Is
that right?
So you could say possession.
Yeah, for show.
Is the trebles?
Yeah.
And the doubles for though is the, you know, the Luis Suarez of Real Madrid.
Yeah, actual and chances created. The
Rakitic. And Nesri gets three goals.
Yeah.
And they were, I wrote down exactly where they were, none of them were at the 6-yard box. And all one touch finishes. One touch finish, 8 yards. One touch, 10 yards. One touch, 6 yards. So basically, that is just about getting the ball in there. And a centre forward who's flying, who's so confident, and reacting quicker than defenders. So it's, you know, the coaching techniques people use, that is the end, you know, the hunger, desire of En-Nesyri to get on the little bits and bobs that were flying about in the penalty box for all of his goals. Last one, he reacts quickest, jumps above everyone else and heads it home. There was a deflection, there was a cutback where he did a fantastic header. So my advice to the strikers would be keep things tidy. But the most important aspect of your job is to, A, get service and then get on the internet service. And then if you've got the quality, finish them off.
Funnily enough, I was reading an article before. You only just messaged me that you were doing this this morning. But I just read an article yesterday about the quality of the efficacy of long-range shooting sometimes, even shots that aren't particularly effective. Partly, and I remember Lenny Lawrence, we're going back to some decades, saying that finish a move with a shot was his point, which is quite a good one, as in don't lose possession on the edge of the penalty area, dithering on the ball. You're better off having the shot, and then you can all get set back up again. Now, obviously, we've developed a language around a lot of these coaching things now. There are similar things that have been happening in football over many years that are now just written about and coached about, et cetera. But there is definitely a case for basically having a crack at goal sometimes because it forces the defence to reset. It mixes it up. And it gets quite boring sometimes, a team that just passes and shifts it and shifts it and shifts it and shifts it like that and gets it. You know, go for the old, as Alex Ferguson said, the carousel. But unless you've got the cutting edge to go with the carousel, it is boring, isn't it? You're just watching the ball go round and round.
That's why the strikers are the most expensive players to buy.
Yeah.
And the most, and they earn the most money.
Yeah.
By and large.
And Rakitic's goal.
Got Ronaldo or a Messi, you love.
Yeah. There's no way.
Suarez.
If a player, and I see this again at lower levels, but players take touches when they should just visit the first, take the gamble on it going wrong sometimes. And Rakitic would be a classic example of that, where if he'd have controlled that ball, he wouldn't have beaten Oblak. He wouldn't have been a goalkeeper that good from that distance. It's only because he hit it first time. And of course, the danger of hitting it first time is that you could be mocked for it, because if you got the timing, hit it so hard. If he got his timing a split second wrong, it was top row of the stand, wasn't it? And then the commentators would have been said, load of rubbish. But he took a gamble, didn't he? He took a gamble on hitting the ball first time.
It's right decision-making when people shoot. Sometimes it's frustrating, and for strikers as well.
Yeah.
When someone has a shot, they're not particularly set up well, and it's 30 yards out, and they blaze it high and wide. And then you have a ruck with your teammate, because it would have been better off if it pass to you or pass to someone else who keeps the attack going. But no, I think I still frustrates me sometimes when you see strikers and they fail to take a shooting opportunity and it's gone, you know. And you know, for that split second, in that split second, you've got three things going through your mind in a split second. You know, do I hold the ball up? Do I shoot? Do I lay it off?
I'll give you one this weekend.
Right decisions. Make the right most decisions.
Furlong Mendy, when he got played through on goal, remember it? Got played in through on goal, and he should have just gone for goal. But he because he's a left back, because he doesn't feel that he's the one who should be scoring, he tried to pass it. I think he's trying to pass it to Benzema. And it's harder to get the pass right than it would have been to score the goal. He just had to keep the ball past the goalkeeper. But instead he tries to pass it because he doesn't feel that he can, even though he's through on goal. Anyway, shall we get into the detail of some of the games? So we'll obviously we've covered few of the headlines in that lot, but let's have a quick look at Real Madrid. So off the back of that, what a dreadful night. We won't go into it again. Their game in the cup in the midweek. So they came back and it was much more solid, wasn't it? I guess you know when it mattered, they got a goal would be crucial in this one. And it was nice to see Hazard playing well and a really good his own goal and a really good contribution without touching the ball on one of Benzema's.
Yeah, he was better, still a million miles away from the Hazard that we all know that saw him play for many years in the Premier League. I think Real Madrid were good. I think Alaves in the first half were as bad a team as I've seen in a long time. Basic defensive errors, giving the ball away, no threat in attack. At half-time, you're thinking it's going to be 6 or 7, unless Abelardo can liven them up. I imagine the dressing room needs a new coat of paint on the wall. Because they were better in the second half, Alaves, much better. And it made a bit more competitive game. It gone at 3-0. José Lu gets a goal to make it 3-1. And for 10 minutes, they had a go. If they get the next goal, you're thinking the fragility of Real Madrid at the moment with their confidence. If Alaves could have got the second, but they didn't. Benzema gets the fourth and wraps the game up. But I thought it was a good... I thought the fundamentals were better from Real Madrid. They worked harder. They played the ball quicker. They defended better when they had to. And they were—I would imagine—they were thankful they were up against such an inept team in that first half. I mean, the goals that Alaves conceded were terrible. Casemiro against Lejeune for the first one—I have no idea what Lejeune's attempted. He's not attempting to do anything. He's just hoping that Casemiro doesn't score with a header, doesn't challenge him. So, basic fundamentals like that were poor from Alaves, were much better from Real Madrid, and it was a much-needed win, a boost for their confidence. Especially with the absence of Zinedine Zidane.
Yeah, who we saw on the phone. Oh, I'm not convinced he was on the phone. I think he just told Bertone to put your phone to your ear at some point in the course of this game. It doesn't do anything anyway.
I think the difference between when a manager is suspended, it's suspended, and they're not allowed in the stadium, or they're allowed in the stadium and not on the bench, and they're not allowed to have contact. I think there's more responsibility on the coach who's standing in then. But in the case of when they're missing through COVID, they can watch the game, they can be on the phone, and, you know, they still make the decisions probably in terms of who to take off and put on. So I think there's a big difference between the two scenarios. And this isn't the first time we've seen this season. Diego Martinez had to miss a game. I think it was one or two other managers that had to miss games as well.
What I don't get, Terry, is why is the manager not a close contact of the players? Why? How can the manager be off and the players not be off? I was surprised because I joked on Twitter about him not being a close contact of Odegaard, but I was thinking, well, do they not spend that much time with each other then? Are they not really close to each other all day? Is he not chatting to them and trying, you know? But it's not just a pop at Zidane this, because as you say, you know, the other cases have been the same. But you would have thought that if the manager was off, you'd lose all the players, wouldn't you? But
yeah, they're changing rooms on a daily basis, the training pitches.
I guess they get tested.
Rooms and games.
They get tested all the time.
Flying on the coach, flying on the coach, driving on the coach.
They have different rules. There is an elite sportsman thing where they're allowed to just be tested and then carry on, as opposed to, because if we were, not that you and I have been in the same room for some months, but, you know, if you say, you know, if your wife had it, you'd have to isolate as well as have a negative test.
Yes.
Whereas they have an exemption. Still not convinced that, you know, are they not spending any time with each other, these people? Just on Odegaard, it looks as though he's off to Arsenal on a loan. We should be pronouncing it Odegaard, apparently. So if you could, from now on,
Terry,
you're
going
to have a drink of water before he attempts it.
I'm going with Odegaard.
Yeah, right. So Odegaard to Arsenal. What's your summary of that? It looks like a loan deal, but whether he'll ever get back and play for Zidane, who knows?
Yeah, I think he'll be back at Real Madrid. Yeah. I think it's a tidy loan move for Arsenal if he's needed. That's my doubt. I'm not sure, you know, where he's going to play. I don't suspect it was Arsenal's biggest problem, another midfield player or an attacking midfield player. So that's my one concern on his behalf, that he does go there and play pretty much every game from now to the end of the season, because that's what his career development needs. So I think it's a good signing by Arsenal, as long as they definitely have a place for him and he's going to play more often than not. And then we'll see more evidence. I hope that, you know, he's the player that we saw at Real Sociedad last season. I do see a future for him at Real Madrid, but it's going to be tough. Zidane clearly doesn't have enough faith in him, because it could be him that stops his move. Because he, you know, Zidane would be able to do that by saying, no, he's a player that I'm counting on, I need for the rest of the season. And it does make Real Madrid lighter again in midfield.
Yeah,
there's no doubt about that. I mean, you look at the numbers. You joked about Casemiro and Modric, Kroos. Then you've got Valverde, Isco. And that's it.
Yeah, can't think of anyone else.
It's
extraordinary life for a major club that is going. I know they're out of the Copa del Rey, but that is still trying to win the Champions League and trying to win La Liga. Yeah. It's a very thin.
There must be someone else. They can't have just have those. Am I missing anyone? Kovacic, is he still there? There must be someone else. They can't just have five.
And
allowing him to go on loan. Yeah. I hadn't thought of it like that.
Yeah. Obviously, Lucas Vasquez plays in there, doesn't he?
He's a right winger or a right. He's a right winger. Does play right back.
Yeah.
In emergency. There can't be. There must be someone else.
Yeah.
I'm not even convinced this guy's a midfield player.
No.
A central midfield player. So I can't imagine why. And I'm trying to think, there must be someone I've missed, but I'm
right. Sure, let's have a look. So this is live breaking radio, everybody. Right, I'm gonna have a quick look at Real Madrid appearances this season. So in terms of appearances, there's no midfielder other than the ones you mentioned in double figures. So Valverde started 8-7 on as a sub. This is La Liga. Courtois 19, Benzema 17, Modric 16 and 2 on as a sub, Varane 18, Casemiro 16 in total, Kroos 17 in total, Modric, I said that, didn't I? Mendy 18 in total, Ramos 14, obviously he's been injured. Yeah, so that is literally it. And going down
is it?
Midfielders. Isco started three on for nine. Lucas Vazquez 14 and then two as a sub. So Odegaard himself, obviously three starts, four on as a sub. Rodrigo, few wide. Yeah, but that's it. Yeah. Yeah. So we haven't forgotten anyone. And Vinicius eight as a sub. So
they're either wide players, as in Vinicius, Rodrigo, Asensio, Vazquez.
So I guess there's the main three, and then that small number for Odegaard and Isco makes us up to all the way up, doesn't it?
And Valverde. So the main three, Valverde's the next one.
Yeah.
Isco. And that's it now.
Yeah.
That's too light, I'm afraid. Especially when one of your better ones is 35.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So let's do Barcelona before we take a podcast ad break, because those podcast ads bring in a fortune, Terry. We got £4.23 last month for those. thank you to the Patreons, by the way. Feel free, everyone else, join in. Patreon.com/LTEL. You notice there aren't many new clothes being worn in these Zoom videos that we're recording. And that's not just because the shops are shut.
And that's my podcast nickname now, isn't it? /LTEL.
Yeah.
We need one of those, like, you know, weird rapper names that come up on our podcast. So I've got /LTEL and you've just got John.
Yeah, I'll work on it.
Come on.
I'm not sure I could pull off a name like Slash. Right. Right. So Elche 0, Barcelona 2. So De Jong scores one. He works very hard. He bust a gut, didn't he, to get to and score that goal. Like I say, the shortest range goal ever, because they showed it on the still. It must have been a centimetre from crossing the line when he got to it. And then big Ricky Pooge obviously jumps up and nods one in, back stick. And did the job, but it was
dull.
I was going to say boring. It was, wasn't it? It was a bit dull, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yep, a little glimpse of life at Barcelona without Messi. And it wasn't great. They did okay. First half, I thought they were tidy and efficient and didn't give the ball away, dominated possession, disappointed with Elche's desire to have a go at a Barcelona team, because these games are not Elche's battle. So you may as well have a free hit and be more attack-minded. Goal difference doesn't matter. But they sat back, they played a really negative formation, allowed Barcelona possession, and it took Barcelona a while to get the opening goal. And then in the second half, Barcelona, I thought, were awful. They gave the ball away, they made mistakes at the back, and there was, you know, two or three chances for Elche to stick and was forced into some action at last. But then they eventually get the win, the goal to wrap it up with Ricky Pooge. Later on, as you said, with a towering header. To take all 3 points. So they were unscathed, but they weren't impressive. I don't like the Braithwaite left wing one, I must be honest. I think he's got to play in the middle of the three, or not at all. I don't see him as an auxiliary, wider attacking player. Dembele showed some good moments again, but still has the tendency to make mistakes and give the ball away cheaply, particularly when the whole team start getting sloppy, which was the case in the second half. So there are some, you know, they got the 3 points, they move on unscathed, but Messi will be back now. So it does make a difference.
I know when earlier, not so long ago, you were checking the shape and the post-game heat maps. Were they at least a better shape without Messi? Is it easier to pick out who is where?
Yeah, it's more of a definite 4-3-3. Although Griezmann is the one then that takes on the Messi role and vacates the centre forward position, which is why I think they're better with Braithwaite in the middle, because he'll stay there. Griezmann drifts all over the place. So that was the only issue I had with the shape, that sometimes there was no one at centre forward. And that's Griezmann, excuse me, working so hard. He has to keep moving. He's an effervescent player, I think that's the right phrase. He's always on the move. Sometimes he just needs to be a little bit more static, disciplined with his positional play when he's playing as the centre forward. I couldn't believe, I know the podcast, but I'm not sure whether this is private conversations we've had or they've been on the podcast. I think you know where they're going with the Antonio Barragán one.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that Barcelona didn't make the most of a player that's seen better days. Yeah. Seen better days. And they played Braithwaite out there. Braithwaite sort of had that, this look of a player that I don't really know what I'm doing out here. You know, I want to be playing my back to goal in the middle of attack. And here I am playing as, you know, Ansu Fati on the left, or, you know, some of the other players are doing that Pedro roll out wide and stuff. And that's not Braithwaite. So they might have been better off in that game, Braithwaite in the middle, Griezmann wider, because, you know, they will always get the Jordi Alba flying down the left anyway. But Braithwaite added a look of a player that didn't really know his job and works hard, does what he has to, but I think he's better off in the middle. That's the only problem with their shape. It's back to 4-3-3. We've had a few different shapes from Koeman. We had three at the back. We had 3-4-2-1 with Pedri and Messi behind the striker. That looked promising. The three at the back looked good because it gave them a little bit extra security with the wing-backs pushing right on. But at the moment, he's gone back to the 4-3-3.
Right. Let's have an ad break there for the podcast listeners and Patreons. Well, thank you again. That's it. And we'll be back later in the week with some other stuff that we will devise. yes. Right. Okay. So hopefully everyone's had an ad break, and yes, let's crack on then. So let's crack on with the rest of La Liga this weekend. So we've talked about En-Nesyri, but he needs another quick mention, Terry, doesn't he? Match-winning contribution, and a terrific, you know, burst of form from a player who is, you know, on the raw side, isn't he?
Just, yeah, I mean, that's an understatement. But when he's, you know, it's his second hat trick in the month of January. He's top scorer in La Liga. Been much talk in recent days about him leaving Sevilla and going to West Ham. I must admit, I thought it was a case of perhaps Sevilla knowing when to sell him, maximise the opportunity and have another player in mind that they could bring in. But I think with the form he's showing now, they shouldn't sell him. Right. I'm not convinced this will happen for the rest of the season. But, you know, it would be foolish to try and replace a player at this short notice, even if Monchi's in charge, that's, you know, cracking goals left, right and centre. We can't complain and say all Sevilla lacking was a 20-goal-a-season striker, and now he's got 12, six in the space of a few weeks, and then see him leave the club. So, no, I think Sevilla should do their utmost to keep him now. And they can do that. Just demand the buyout clause from anyone that's interested. And then they'll have no choice, and they'll be quite happy then to get the money. I don't know what the buyout clause is, but it's a lot more than that's been talked about from one or two clubs that have been interested in him. But, you know, fair play to him. You know, we're allowed to change our mind. Mm-hmm. And hopefully for Sevilla's case and his case, we will. And in a year or two's time, we're saying about a player, talking about a player that's scoring 20 goals a year every year and all those little things that you needed to improve on, he has done. His attitude is great. His work rate is great. His desire to score goals is great. And, you know, he's fantastic at the moment.
Yeah, and not everybody comes through as the ready-made article, do they? Although we've seen him in La Liga since he was very young, wasn't he, when he first broke it through. And I remember him scoring, maybe on his debut, maybe a couple of games in, scoring a sensational goal. And everyone thinking, wow. But then It's been a checkered progression since then, hasn't it? Some good things and some bad things about him. Another kid coming through the ranks, Terry, in La Liga is a kid called Joaquin, I think, who plays for Betis.
Yes, just 39.
Yeah. So it's a quite extraordinary game. I mean, Real Sociedad were fuming because they were 2-0 up and seemingly coasting. Ended up with 2-2. Joaquin came on and set up one for Canales, and then he scored. So he's now in between, in terms of oldest ever goal scorers, he's in between, apparently. So he's overtaken Puskas, and he's almost at Di Stefano, which is not a bad place to be between the all-time greats.
And actually, Betis, I thought, deserves something from the game. 2-0 down with, 85 minutes gone. It's unlikely, looking unlikely they can get anything that they deserve. But I thought it was a really good game. I think possession was pretty shared, as you'd expect from two teams that play this type of football. But it was a fantastic comeback because time's running out. So, you know, Joaquin gets the equaliser in the 92nd minute. Real Sociedad will be kicking themselves because their results haven't been great of late. They'll be pleased that Oyarzabal scored again. They'll be pleased that Isak amongst the goals after allowing William Jose to leave. I like the new signing, Carlos Fernandez. I think he fits the bill for Real Sociedad, mobile, dynamic centre-forward that can play wide, that can play slightly deeper, does score goals like he showed at Granada. And I think they've got him for about €10 million. So I think that represents a good deal. And he fits in the age bracket of the rest of the players, another young player. So I think that would be interesting to see how that signing goes for Real Sociedad. But 2-0 up with 5 minutes to go, you know, you're going to be kicking yourself to the album goal, 3 points, because, you know, we talked about at the top of the league, weren't we, not so long ago. As I said, the results haven't been great.
It's two wins in 15. That's the issue, isn't it? It's loads of draws in there.
And suddenly Sevilla gone above them, and they're fighting with Villarreal, and there'll be one or two others that fancy their chances of catching the team that many thought, including us, I think, they had a good chance of Champions League football this season. So it's not out of the question that they can still do, but the Real Sociedad are finding it tough at the moment to win games of football. And Betis, I thought, you know, as I said, I think they were worth the draw ultimately.
Let's mention Villarreal, shall we? So draws has been their problem, hasn't it? They've drawn 10 of their 18 games, which is a very high draw rate. They're unbeaten in a while. They're unbeaten in. So it's 6 games they haven't lost since December 29th, including Copa del Rey. So that's 6 games in all, but the last 2 draws against Granada and Huesca, which is just costly, isn't it?
We should have, but this would have been an obvious one if you do like a gamble on the draw.
Yeah.
Both drawn 10 games. And the reason being, Huesca had 1 shot on target, Villarreal had 2 shots on target. So that's not enough to be, you know, Villarreal have had a little bit unlucky lately with players missing through injury. And Huesca, just this is what happens with Huesca. They're so close all the time to getting a win and just keep drawing and drawing and drawing. Ultimately, it's going to start becoming, you know, too big a mission for them to get out of trouble. But to be honest, a home draw for Huesca, home to Villarreal, in the context of what they've been doing this season, isn't a bad result.
So
I think Villarreal go into that one, you know, after the back of that game, Villarreal will be the one most disappointed that they didn't have more than 2 shots on target in 90 minutes of football against a team that's bottom of the league. Points drop for Villarreal.
New coach and everything, but time is against Huesca, isn't it? They do need to start getting some results, don't they? You know, decent performances. Is that we're almost past that point.
There's a gap opening up now, first time this season.
Yeah, because Osasuna beat Granada by 3-1, which is a huge result as well, wasn't it, for Osasuna?
Yeah, and do you know what? I watch all of these games, and I promise people, I'm totally neutral, totally biased. I love the league. And whenever I watch a game of football, I want the team that's playing better to win. But in this game, I was so rooting for Osasuna because there was a penalty disallowed. It was an absolute scandal. Great images seeing Arasati acting, throwing a tantrum like a 10-year-old who's just been told he's got to go in for his dinner when the referee disallowed the penalty. It should have been a penalty. Explain it. Run down the right channel by Kayeri, who came on as a sub at halftime. And he's being fouled by Herman Sanchez. He's being held back. And Kayeri flicks an arm out. It's not an elbow. I'm describing it in vision for those watching. But he puts an arm out. Herman Sanchez is holding his shoulder 2 or 3 times. And then, because the arm comes out from Kayeri, Herman Sanchez waits 2 strides, realises Kayeri's getting away from him and goes down. The ball, Kayeri crosses the ball into the box. There's an attempt at goal. Defender, I can't remember who it was, Queenie, puts his arms up and it looks like it hits his arm, goes to VAR, you're looking, does it hit his face? No, it hits his arm, should be a penalty. And then they take it back on VAR to the run down the channel and end up disallowing the whole move and booking Kayeri. I mean, it should have been a foul to Osasuna. And he ended up booking Caleri and disallowing the attendance. So I thought that was an injustice. Really, really annoyed me. I was going for it, sitting in front of the telly, shouting at the referee, because, you know, I thought that was wrong. So from then on, I was desperate for Osasuna. Nothing against Granada. I like Granada. Just in these circumstances, I wanted justice to prevail. And in Moncayo, that was a 2-1 up. Moncayo gets the third, and Osasuna do get the win. So that's my little rant of the week about this
First win for them since in the league since October. I might just actually let me share the screen. The Patreons get a shared screen. That's what they get.
Did well as well. We haven't seen too much of him, have we?
Yeah.
He started, came off at half time, I assume through injury. He came off at half time after scoring two close range, one touch finishes, which is what he does, what he did at Mallorca. And then when he went off, Caleri came on and continued the theme of being that aggressive, you know, motivated striker to continue to cause Granada problems. So I firmly believe Osasuna will get out of trouble.
Yeah.
As you can see, there's a gap now appearing at the bottom with Huesca, 6 points adrift. Look at their wins. They've won one. They need two just to catch Osasuna and wide the lid and Eibar to get anywhere near them. And that's going to be tough at Huesca. Certainly not impossible. Almost half a season to go. But, you know, it's a big ask now. Elche have slipped and are sliding their way down and have gone from me describing them as inspirational to, you know, not anything but inspirational at the moment.
Yeah,
Alaves at the half time, first half from Alaves was of a team that's going to get relegated.
So let's give that detail for the people who aren't seeing the screen. So Huesca are bottom with 13 points. Elche, they've got two games in hand. They've only played 18, but they've got 17. Alaves 18. Osasuna out of the drop zone. The only win anywhere near the bottom are the bottom 14s in the form guide there. So they're all struggling, those teams at the bottom. And then Valladolid got themselves a 2-2 draw against Levante. Levante are 11th. So that, and all the other one we haven't mentioned, Terry, is Celta 1, Eibar 1 as well. So Eibar, they're still down there as well. Again, exactly the same record, actually, as Valencia and Valladolid. I noticed 4 wins, 8 draws, 8 defeats. It's still remarkably close down there, with the exception of Huesca.
Yeah, and we could go all the way up to Cadiz, who have played 22 games more than a lot of other teams, 24 points. They're 6 points clear of relegation. They need to find some form. I would say, in my opinion, Celta up are all okay. And I would imagine Athletic Club and Valencia will be okay. So it's going to be the usual suspects. I would imagine Levante are going to be okay. So I think the bottom six, as it stands now, are the teams that are firmly entrenched in what they knew when they started the season, that they're going to be in a relegation tussle. Eibar was a decent game. Celta, you still look at that, you think they should be winning against Eibar at home because of Eibar's position in the league, the players Eibar have. But Eibar have a real style of play that's really good to watch now. It's developed as the season has gone on. And they have a player, Brian Hill. This is going to be the Brian Hill podcast again. Great strike that was. I mean, it was Muto to set him up nicely for the volley, and he finishes it first time inside the penalty area. So, you're looking at, we've been talking on the podcast this season about Brian Hill, particularly recently, and he has been missing, and Eibar lost matches, and he's back, and we're talking about him. There must be a place for him at Sevilla next year. There's a place for him at Barcelona and Real Madrid, the way he's playing at the moment.
So,
unbelievable.
How much would you pay for Brian Hill at the moment?
If it's not my money and I'm spending the club's money, I'd spend 30, 40 million on him. Is that good? I think he's been sensational this season. So we've talked about Sevilla needing back next year. I'm pretty sure they will. But the way he's playing, you know, he could be a massive, massive superstar. Brilliant player.
Right, I think we'll leave it there then, Terry. So we'll be back with something for the Patreons later in the week. We'll be back with some more from La Liga. Thank you to everybody for listening. Thank you to the Patreons for your additional contributions as well. Enjoy your La Liga, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.